Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
Today, I want you to be sure to greet the folks who are the ushers and to take a look at what they are wearing, and also our AV team. People on the team were invited to dress in ways that, you know, made them feel really great, you know, to express themselves in any way they wanted to through especially their garments or what they did to their hair or whatever. And some of them, I mean, all of them, I think, really took me seriously. I see that Ralph is not just wearing a Hawaiian shirt, but he's got the lei as well. So, you know, people kind of booted it up a notch today. So it's a part of the message. It's a part of the message. And so here comes your welcome.
So I'm Steve Burns, the worship associate for today.
Oh, and I am Beth Banks, the senior minister for this congregation, and I am actually both of the other ministers as well.
We forgot to do that the first time. Today's service is about our bodies and our spirits. These words of welcome were adapted from a reading by Sean Neil Barron. Your body is welcome here, all of it. Yes, even that part.
And that part.
And yes, even that part. The parts you love and the parts you don't. For in this place we come with all that we are and all that we have been and all that we are going to be.
Your body and all that is within it, both wanted and unwanted, has a place here. Our bodies join in a web of co-creation, created and creating, constantly changing us.
Scarred and tattooed, tense and relaxed, diseased and cured, unfamiliar and intimate, formed in infinite diversity of creation. Your body is welcome here, all of it. So take a moment and welcome it. Take a moment to feel in it. Take a moment to be in it.
To acknowledge all that's being held by the people in this room, we light one pillar candle for the sorrows of the world, for the moments that weigh heavy on our hearts. And we light one pillar candle for the joys of the world, for the moments of hope and celebration. And change is coming. We have been so blessed to have Andre as our pianist and our accompanist at UUCD for the past year and a half. I have seen him go from like open-eyed wonder at what we do in our services to kind of being ready every Sunday for getting some surprises. His sense of musicality is superb, and he has been a wonderful partner in collaboration as we present worship together. It's been a delight to see him really become a part of the congregation. He has teaching relationships among members of our congregation, and he did a fundraiser for us that raised thousands of dollars. And you might have noticed that he kind of slips around the back and joins the choir sometimes. So he really has become a part of our community, and he is so musically so collaborative and is so expressive at the keyboard. And we're really going to miss you a lot. And we're really happy for you. So you will be with us through the middle of June, and just know that every Sunday will be precious for us.
We'll be back.
He'll be back, he says. He'll be back. He has said that many times, and I believe that he loves us. So there's going to be a party for him on June 11th, so mark your calendar, and there'll be our opportunity to really say goodbye to him in a big way and show our love. So mark your calendars. I also have another announcement that some of you have been waiting for. There is a baby. Whee! Daniel's language. I kind of know his writing. We are happy to announce the newest addition to our family, Myrtle Kirsch McLean, at 9 pounds, 10 ounces. You are very expressive. I wish I had a recording of that. And 21 inches long. She is already too big for the newborn sizes of clothing. And this is why I know it's Daniel. Not that Morgan couldn't do this, but he always says stuff like this, and too big for our hearts. So that is the beautiful news. Indeed, Andre knew that I was going to follow his sad news with that. And so let us center through music, Andre.
And I asked today for Pat Moore Pickett to light the chalice. As my wingman who covers me when I forget to do things and I got distracted between services. Pat is very active in the community. She's been doing a great deal of work on the immigration justice team. She's been helping to transport the asylum families in Davis. She recently joined the Yolo County Health Council and does a lot for our church. Forget about enlightenment. Sit down whenever you are and listen to the wind that is singing in your veins. Feel the longing, the fear, the love in your bones. Open your heart to who you are right now, not who you'd like to be. Not the saint you're striving to become, but the being right here before you, inside you. All of you is holy. You're already more and less than whatever you can know. Breathe out, look in, let go. My extended family has some exceptional athletes. One is my niece, Kelsey Card. She set records in high school and college and is the only athlete in U.S. history, in collegiate history, to have record distances in the three sports of hammer throw, shot put, and discus. Her performance in discus landed her on the Olympic team in Rio, where I was able to watch her compete. This is Kelsey. Throwing shot put, throwing discus, and this is the hammer throw. There's some stats up there. She was the 7-time Big Ten champion. She also has her Olympic qualifier. She was third in the country. Despite her amazing athleticism, here are moments from her life in her own words. In high school and traveling for sports, opposing fans would yell incredibly hurtful things, call me a man and a cheat for being so large and athletic. I was smaller then than I am now, and still was bullied for being so big and not slender or petitely feminine. Health classes in school were always embarrassing, as I was morbidly obese by the BMI chart. I also get judged when eating out. I have even been rudely passed over and ignored by servers when I needed to finish my food order, like they were saying I needed to be done. Choosing medical providers is tricky because so few understand how my body is being used. I am lucky that my current primary care was my track team doctor, so she fully understands and never shames me. She also looks at my health and sees beyond just a number. Prior doctors in my small hometown admonished me for my weight. I was even called fat by my sister when in college, leading us to not speaking for a year. Eventually, we reconciled, and I like to think I opened her mind to how health can take many shapes, especially since all my measurable health components are normal. I understand that my size is not functional beyond my training and competing needs, and I'm curious to see how my place in the physical world changes when I hopefully go back to a more socially acceptable size when I retire from throwing. Like Kelsey, I am a large person. However, my size is rarely criticized. A physical therapist asked me if I used to be a bodybuilder. And after my first worship associate talk, a member said, "It was nice to see a big, strong man at the pulpit." Although once, an older person commented that I needed a man bra. For both Kelsey and I, buying clothes is very challenging, and travel can be agony. We both are easy to spot in a crowd and feel safe in sketchy situations. In choir, I generally try to be in the back, as few people can see over or around me. Mostly, I am happy with my body, though losing weight is a goal. When I married Pat, I dropped down to 193 pounds to fit into a nice but 20-year-old suit. It did fit pretty well, but some friends said, "Enough, don't lose any more weight." Not what most women hear, I suspect.
Preparing for this service about body image has been fascinating, and it's been a revealing process. It was more complicated than I imagined, and I knew it would be complicated. The lesson I learned was fundamental to our faith as Unitarian Universalists. The first principle of Unitarian Universalism is to affirm the worth and dignity of every person. And when it comes to affirming the worth of our bodies, when it comes to assuming that every body, every kind of body has dignity, we have a lot of work to do. "There is no wrong way to have a body," wrote Glenn Marla. When I started researching for this sermon, I posted questions on several national Unitarian Universalist clergy Facebook pages. And I asked, beyond what I've learned from my personal life, what other resources should I seek out? Whose experiences should I consider when looking for wisdom? And I was offered a very long list of book recommendations, movies, sermons, readings, and a lot of opinions. And what was central in everything was the right of all people to control their own bodies. And I was grateful to a colleague who wrote, "I don't know you, but if you can wear clothing off the rack, then you are at risk of speaking for someone's experience that is not yours." She continued by encouraging me to write and speak for today, but to do so with special care. She reminded me that those of us who are white, for example, have learned not to speak as if we know the experience of someone who is black. Those who are born as United States citizens don't really know the fear of living with the status of being undocumented. Cisgender people whose outward appearance aligns with their sexual orientation and gender identity cannot speak for the complexities of someone's life who is gender fluid. And so the same is true for speaking as a smaller sized person, as if one is an authority for the experience of, and I was asked to use this word, a fat person. We don't like that word. You've got a lot of different phrases, but the people I worked with said, "Say it, a fat person." The authors I read were sometimes white, but more often people of color. Some stories come from fat, small people who can wear clothing off the rack, but at, you know, the larger sizes. But more often the stories and voices are from large fat people whose size is too large for regular stores. And in the book, The Body is Not an Apology by Sonia Renee Taylor, and if you are interested in what I talk about today, this is a fabulous resource. She chose to lift up the life experiences of those who are fat and who, as an additional identity, are more marginalized yet. The undocumented, the trans, all those who are considered, in her word, deviant. She reasons that when the experiences of those who are marginalized are heard and understood, everyone wins. Everyone is given permission to understand their body as they choose. There is no wrong way to have a body. Glenn Marla, transvestite, playwright, and a downtown prophet. Body image includes so much more than a person's weight and size. Our culture does business with something that these people called body currency. Some bodies are valued more than others because of weight, but not just weight, where the weight is distributed on the body. How much more specific can you get than that? They are valued for their height or lack of height, the color of their skin, the size of their features, the amount and kind of hair that they have, and where the hair grows on the body. Two nights ago, I had a dream that suddenly I grew a very fabulous full beard. And in the dream, I was trying to figure out how I was going to explain this to you and whether I should shave it and hide it or just say, hey, here I am. And I don't know how this happened, but that's what happens when you're a minister and you're really into your subject. You have to look out. And I actually ended up coming before you and saying, well, it's a wonderful beard, isn't it? And it was really one of the best beards I've ever seen in my life. Those who have high body currency are valued more in society. And I'm just going to let you imagine what that would look like. Who might have that high value? What's especially painful is how the value given to our body is not something that others necessarily do to us, but too often we actually accept the message of society and believe that our bodies have limited value. We believe that our bodies have limited value. Because few bodies measure up to that very, very narrow ideal that has been set before us. We hear it from the media, and from the moment we wake up in the morning, perhaps it's our own self-talk, but anytime we turn on the media, there is that ideal. And we often hear it from those who are closest to us. As Steve said, our family. Everyone I spoke with about this service, and I do mean everyone, had stories about their body not measuring up. Every single person. My own family had a very complicated relationship with weight and body image. I am the only person in my family who was not considered obese by our family doctor. And as a teenager, my top dresser drawer was where I kept the tape measure that I used every day at least once, as well as a calorie booklet to record every single thing I ate. And no one could figure out why I didn't have strength and why sometimes I would shake. And only later did we know it was really with hunger. I was as obsessed about weight as my sisters. And for me, it was out of fear that I would suffer the same fate as my sisters and my parents. I knew the judgments that they endured from outside the family, and I heard how they judged each other, often at the dinner table. Adie Bryant is a favored comedian for the very popular Saturday Night Live. She was in her 20s when she landed a job with the show. And when she walked into the dressing room to get ready, she was surprised that all the outfits they had chosen for that night's scenes were what she imagined an old woman might wear. And I have news for her, because that might not be what an old woman might wear. I can guarantee that many old women now choose to not hide their bodies. So she had to teach the staff of Saturday Night Live how to work with a young woman who expected to present herself in short skirts, low-cut dresses, and in every way a sexually attractive and engaged woman. Knowing her background with Saturday Night Live made it all the more interesting to watch her as the lead in the sitcom movie series Shrill. Six-show TV series. This was one of the assignments for the worship associate for today, and he readily jumped in and watched all of these. Author Lindy West, of a book by that same name, worked closely with Adie Bryant as the series was developed, but it was Adie's life that created many of those specific incidents in each week's show. Her character in the show is Annie, has sex with her partner. That's like first series. And they hear his roommates come home. And he is ashamed to have his friends meet her. You don't mind going out the back door again? I mean, like you did last time. Oh, no, she assures him. It's fine. And then we see her lifting herself over the back fence and hear the thud as she falls again. When she discovers that she's pregnant, we learn that she didn't insist that her partner use a condom. Maybe no one else would ever want her. Maybe this is her only chance for intimacy, and Steve and I agreed we wanted to give him the boot right away. But she keeps this relation going with him. If only she talked with us. She uses the morning after pill as birth control, which is someone who's interested in women's rights just horrified me. Because going to a gynecologist would mean admitting to a physician that she was sexually active. What if the physician infers, even with a raised eyebrow or a pause, the message, "You're kidding. You? What kind of person would want you?" That's what she feared. And so it's shame layered upon shame. And the pharmacist who frequently sold her these morning after pills after she'd have sex every time, she'd go and get a morning after pill, never explained that the pill would only be effective for someone under 175 pounds. She wouldn't ask, and he wouldn't offer the information. It would all be just too embarrassing to imagine a fat person having sex. She is a writer, and at work she is given inconsequential writing jobs, keeping up on a calendar, because it's assumed that she doesn't have much creativity or energy or innovation just because she's fat. And when she proves herself as a writer, and what she writes becomes the most popular articles and blogs for the newspaper, she pays a high price. She challenged the validity, you see, of the culture's evaluation of her body currency as a measure of her total worth. In the series, Annie is mesmerized by a woman who is similar to her in physical size, and Annie has almost stepped into the crosswalk, and then those cars don't stop for her, and she tries again. And then she sees this woman walking confidently into the crosswalk, someone's just as large as she is. And the cars stop. And the woman wears bright, bright red lipstick and a flowing red dress that accentuates her size. And she strides into a florist store and purchases flowers. And somehow in this interchange, we realize that they are for her own enjoyment. There's no wrong way to have a body, says Glenn Marla, who is described as an obese transvestite dressed up in tights, a playwright, and a downtown poet. Every author I read is clear. Only when we accept ourselves can we honestly accept others, and only when we have the strength to self-define the value of our own existence will we really see the value in others. And when we are secure in our understanding of ourselves, we will be comfortable with others expressing themselves freely. Adi Bryant, that comedian from Saturday Night Live, published her writing online in response to her commentary about living as a fat person. She regularly received hate mail and death threats. She thought she had experienced every kind of hate mail and had risen above it, was impervious to their insults. She'd heard it all. But one troll, a person who followed and bullied her on the internet, undermined her strength, found that crack in her veneer. Her father had died a few months before, and she was still struggling to accept his death. She started receiving messages that came from him, saying how disappointed he was in her. She was fat, her father wrote, and therefore unaccomplished. Now, she knew it wasn't her father. And yet he identified as her father and knew so much about her life. Her father said, "The other two daughters, they're fine. But you, what a disappointment." Eventually, she discovered the identity of the troll and confronted him online. And what is amazing is that later he agreed to be interviewed by NPR, and I did happen to hear that some time ago. And he donated to the Cancer Society. He really had had major changes. And she asked him, why had he done this? It was devastating. And he apologized, saying that he was struggling with his own sense of worthlessness because of his weight. And this is a totally separate issue. There was a lack of success in his life. He felt that he was a failure. And then here in this blog was someone who was successful and defiant and demanding that the world accept her as being worthy and exactly as she was, that that was enough. The apology and the self-awareness was a turning point in his life. And in another book that I read called Land Whale, I read this. Those who are cruel are those who are most insecure, unhappy, and often unaware of their own struggles. Weight and body size is a trigger in our culture for anger and judgment and self-righteous condemning. When the authors I read presented themselves as really enjoying life, when they walked with confidence, just walked with confidence, ate with obvious delight, spoke or laughed loudly, or wore clothing that called attention to their body in any way, they said that people felt free to openly make judgmental comments about what they were eating, about who they were, and what they should do with their lives. These authors, you see, are not willing to be invisible and to act as if they had no worth. Grace Lee Boggs, community organizer, taught that honoring and valuing oneself is energy well spent and prepares the way for more extensive change that we may wish to bring in the world. She wrote, "The only sustainable foundation for a changed world is internal transformation, so we can have the strength to do what we need to do." There is a multi-million-dollar business in our culture, and that is beyond the United States, that is invested in convincing us that there is one perfect way to look for people of any sexual orientation or any gender identity. And we can choose to pour our financial, emotional, and spiritual resources into trying to conform to that narrow ideal. Or we can decide on the body image that suits us well, to adorn ourselves because it pleases us and expresses who we are, but not to conform. We can accept that others will make their choices then for their own reasons, and we may not understand those reasons. And that's okay. And you get a poem that the 9:30 service didn't get. And there was someone who left me a quote, too. I have this thing called a life, which I experience through this thing called my body. Anonymous. But this is from The Body Is Not an Apology by Sonia Renee Taylor. And it's called My Mother's Belly, because we just talked about somebody who gave birth. It seems like a good poem. The bread of her waist, a loaf, I would knead with my 8-year-old palms, sweaty from play. My brother and I marveled at the ridges and grooves, how they would summit at her navel, how her belly looked like a walnut, how we were once seeds that resided inside. We giggled, my brother and I, when she would recline on the couch, lift her shirt, and let her belly spread like cake batter in a pan. It was as much a treat as licking from the sweet electric mixers on birthdays. The undulating of my mother's belly was not a shame she hid from her children. She knew we came from this. Her belly was a gift we kept passing between us. It was both hers of her body and ours for having made it new and different. Her belly was an altar of flesh built in remembrance of us and by us. What remains of my mother's belly resides in a container of ashes I keep in a closet. Every once and again, I open the box, sift through the fine crystals with palms that were once 8. Feel the grooves and ridges that do not summit now, but rill through fingers. Granules so much more salt than sweet today. And yet still I marvel at her once body. Even in this form, I say, I came from this. The Universalist tradition speaks of a love that encompasses all. There are many ways that we have value, and the body that we have is only one part of that worth and does not define us. We are writers and mothers and fathers and daughters and siblings and discus throwers and hockey players and musicians. We are tender-hearted, and we are defiant. There is no wrong way to have a body, and no one way to have value. And to that I say, amen. And I invite you into a time of prayer and of meditation. And this is a very different prayer. You can participate by touching your body. You should not be a stranger to your own body. Or you can imagine me blessing you. This is one rendition of what I do for people when they are ill, for when they are about to pass, and for after they have died. And I also do it for those who sit with someone waiting for death, for those who are living. So we begin with the prayers of the people. For Andre and his new life that will take him back to the East Coast to be with Adrian and to begin a different life with his profession of music. And we hold in our hearts to the new parents, Morgan and Daniel and Mertiel Kirsch McLean, and all 9 pounds, 10 ounces, and 21 inches of her beautiful body. a prayer for your body. And you may participate by blessing or being blessed. A blessing on your eyes for all the things of beauty that you have seen. Remember these. A blessing on your mouth for the words you have said that brought healing to the world and the words you will say. A blessing on your heart for the love you have given and received and the love you will continue to bring to this world. A blessing on your hands for all the ways they have touched the world and brought it close and made change for the good. And a blessing on your feet, the precious feet, for the journeys near and far that your legs and feet have taken you and where they will take you in the future. And a blessing on these beautiful and sacred bodies and all that remains for us to do for the miracle that is our life and that is our body. Amen.
We extinguish the pillar candle, symbolizing our sorrows. May they be lightened. We extinguish the pillar candle of our joys. May they continue to spread and grow. And extinguish the flame of the chalice. May we bring brightness, compassion, and joy to the world.
I do invite you to take hands or hold a shoulder or whatever is comfortable for you. And if you heard a message here today that resonated with you, I hope you take it with you out into the world. We receive fragments of holiness and glimpses of eternity and brief moments of insight.
Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. Let this congregation say amen.
Amen. Amen.